Welcome to the second of the Religious Studies Project's collaborative episodes. This time, we decided to ask our interviewees to respond to whether scholars of religion should be critics or caretakers, using terms from Russell McCutcheon's influential book, which was entitled Critics, Not Caretakers, and then using terms originally coined by Burton Mack. Given the range of scholars who were involved, sociologists, historians, even theologians, the range of responses that we got varied quite considerably, including whether a scholar could be a critic of a particular, the behaviour of particular religious groups, or whether they should be critics of the concept and category of religion at all, and also whether being a critic or caretaker need necessarily be oppositional categories. And to start us off, we have the legendary Eileen Barker.
I think as a social scientist, one has to have a critical approach, but that doesn't mean to say you criticise the movements that you're studying. In fact, I don't think you should. Obviously, you don't say or even protect them and be caretakers if they're doing something bad. During the last couple of years, Inform has been instrumental in sending one healer to prison for 10 years for using inappropriate sexual means, i.e. rape, on young people. And if we hadn't helped the police or helped people who were complaining to us to get in touch with the police, then they wouldn't be in prison. The other one was grievous bodily harm, beating up previous members. On the other hand, I think it's our duty to alert and reassure. So I would say we should be alerters to say, look, there have been suspicious deaths here, or not even just criminal things make people aware of what's likely to happen if somebody joins a group, and perhaps discuss with a group like the problems that parents are having, in order to help them see and perhaps help themselves in having better public relations. But I believe firmly, as far as it's possible, that we should be methodologically agnostic. I am not a cult apologist, although I've been called this on various occasions, nor yet am I anti-cult. I am a social scientist who studies new religious movements, or whatever you want to call them.
Timothy Fitzgerald.
If I've understood the question right, and it's a reference to Russ McCutcheon's really good book, and I think that we should be critics in the sense that we critique the category and the discourses which which carry that category or which are formed by it. And I don't think that we should be looking after religion as though, you know, it's our special job to sort of protect religion. I think we question, you know, what religion is, and therefore we're critics. I think that it's really an ideological machine for the production of a sort of mystified view of the world. I see the real, not the conscious purpose and intent of individual scholars who may be doing incredibly interesting work, but looking at the categories which are structuring this whole field called religious studies, I would say that it has a kind of ideological intentionality, which is to promote this view that there are certain institutions which are natural, common sense, reasonable, in tune with the real world. In a way, it's doing something which a lot of us who claim to be studying religions and writing about religions I'm not really fully aware of. I think that there's an elision in consciousness.
Linda Woodhead.
It's a good question. It's a very tricky question. So there's quite a positivistic history to religious studies that says it's just purely about neutral description of what is, which is increasingly criticised, you know, in the light of sociology of knowledge, that we don't actually approach the world like that. I think there are good reasons to criticise that view. However, I do think it's incumbent on people who study religion, not from theology, but from sociology of religion point of view, my own background, to try and be as truthful as possible in their representation of what they're studying. I do hold on very much to that. I don't think it's... I think there is something in that almost Enlightenment ideal. Although I would qualify it by saying that I don't think... I think the truth is relative to particular contexts. And so in some situations, when you're representing religion truthfully, you may have to become its advocate. If the audience is particularly hostile, you know, irrationally hostile to religion, you may have to try and represent, this isn't trivial, this isn't important, and go in that direction and be a caretaker in that sense, I suppose. But then on the other hand, if you're trying to represent religion to a group that's very deeply committed to something itself, you may be very critical, you may have to point out things they don't want to see about it, like the way it ties in with particular group interests, or Marx's particular gender roles, or things that aren't necessarily particularly palatable to say. So I think you're in this position always of having to monitor who you're representing the truth to and in what ways. And you also have, as a scholar, you're constantly moving between two communities. As you'll know in your own fieldwork, you try and absolutely enter into the worlds of the religions that you're representing and be as empathetic as you can be, but then you're cycling out back into the world of the scholar, asking different questions, and you have a very strong commitment to the criteria of your and protocols of your own discipline. So you're living between these two worlds the whole time. So it's neither an either or. I think it's a complex mixture of both those things.
Benjamin Beit Halami.
Okay. I've written a lot about this very basic problem of apologetics. In other words, some of the people who call their work Psychology of Religion are really apologists for religion. And their motivation is to make religion better and more attractive and stronger. This is not my motivation. And I think that what they are doing doesn't really help us, because they are so committed to a religious point of view that they don't have the energy to really study. So in most cases, I think that this kind of work should be ignored, and that's what I do. But at the same time, I don't think that I can be a critic of religion. In other words, I'm not going to say, you know, religion X needs to change, and they have a list of commandments, they should change commandment number 22. I would never do that. We certainly shouldn't be critics, and we shouldn't be caretakers.
Grace Davey.
Well, the short answer is both. But let's think of it in terms of how to be good critics rather than bad critics. Because a good critic is a caretaker. What I would like to see in the Academy is religion taken seriously, not a reductionist approach, which is it must be really something else like ethnicity or nationalism or something. It is religion, and it's honoured as a subject, autonomous subject, and we must address it carefully. Some aspects of religion are very healthy and need encouraging. Some aspects are not, and we need to be discerning and careful and accurate. our criticism should be addressed to understanding better the situation, understanding religion in all its fullness, whether it is a creedal statement or academic debate, or whether it's lived a religion, or religion in relation to all sorts of other aspects of society. Take it seriously, be respectful, engage, inform. I'm much less happy about the kind of destructive or dismissive attention, attitude to religion. I mean, think of it as a joke, or not something that intelligent people do. This is not helpful. And this kind of attitude to religion, and careful respect, but also pointing out things that are not so good, can be created in the classroom, of course, whether that be the seminar in a university with students, or whether that be in the classroom in a school, when you are dealing with religious education or the discussion of religion at a very different level. You must demand of your students mutual respect. They must respect each other, and they must respect the communities that they are dealing with. And a very good way of doing this, of course, is to suggest they might engage with those communities, whether they do this as an ethnographic or anthropological study.
Yeah.
How are they going to present themselves, and what kind of attitude are they going to come with? And this is a very interesting learning process.
Elizabeth Mickelson.
I think there should be both. You can be critical of some elements of religion, and then you can be sympathetic and supportive of other elements, I think. We have to, you cannot have one attitude towards rich phenomena as religions are. So, I mean, you have to sort out when should you be critical and when can you sympathize.
Jolyon Mitchell.
I think they can be both, and I think they can do other things as well. I'm not sure about the metaphors of a caretaker as well, because it makes me think of somebody wearing a very large hat with a big bundle of keys opening and locking up a cage or a door. But perhaps as someone who's interested in preserving and discovering and excavating, then if it's a sort of dynamic caretaker, then I think it's an interesting metaphor to play with, because there is a sense in which these are traditions that have long, long histories, and actually it's important to both hold on to those traditions, understand those traditions, critique those traditions and reinterpret them for the contemporary age. So if you've noticed there from my answer, I've moved from the caretaker to the critique. But the critic, again, is not someone who's just sort of sitting there tapping away on their own on a laptop, but they're actually involved in a community of interpretation. It might be a community that's asking difficult, tough questions of religious traditions, and I think that's also vital, because actually there is a need for ongoing conversations between scholars and between different religious traditions, which I think can be mutually beneficial and can actually build and move towards more peaceful, more empathetic and more dynamic and creative understanding between religious traditions and within religious traditions.
Lewis Lee.
Well, I think that question very much depends on the discipline you're coming from. I'm a sociologist and tend to work with social scientists in the main. And from that domain, I would say absolutely you should be neither. There's obviously a critical strand of sociology and other social sciences, but I see the primary role of social sciences of being to understand the world better. That isn't to say there aren't applications of that knowledge, and that isn't to say that social scientists can't be involved in discussing those applications, but I think it can be problematic to do so, for one, because it makes the conduct of objective social research more complicated, unless by dealing with your own sort of more active agendas it helps you reflect on them more clearly in the conduct of your work. But I certainly don't see that I could say you would be you have a purely critical or supportive role of religion. You might be concerned with positive or negative outcomes, and that's going to be very much case by case. So neither.
Stephen Sutcliffe.
Well, this is an interesting question, and we're indebted to Russell McCutcheon for particularly bringing that question to the forefront of debates and discussions in religious studies through his collection of chapters under that theme published a few years ago. And indeed, Russell was kind enough to let me make use of some of those chapters when I was teaching a course using this very volume as a reading source for the students. My own views on this, I think, have shifted a little bit over time. I certainly don't think that religious studies scholars should be caretakers. Religion has enough caretakers. Religious people and organizations are quite able to caretake their own affairs, represent themselves, publish accounts of themselves, raise funds for themselves, and all the kinds of things that are required to keep cultural formations, cultural traditions going. So I don't think religion really need a friendly caretakering from religious studies academics. Perhaps they would caretakering from theological academics might be a different kettle of fish. But I think religious studies requires that second element in this trope to make sense at all, and that's the critical element. But I wouldn't want religious studies to be seen as a kind of an ideological critique of religion. I think it's possible to broker various theorists who might want to argue that kind of position, and these theorists would certainly be important within religious studies conversations. We might think of Marx as the obvious example, Engels. There would be others as well. And these kind of theories should certainly be seriously considered by religious studies. But as a field as a whole, as a disciplinary formation, I think it's our job certainly to supply critical distance on the claims and the phenomena of religious practitioners, religious beliefs, religious rituals, and everything to do with this complex category religion. So we certainly need critical distance, but this is a different thing from being ideological or cultural critics, I think. And I think the very notion of having some critical distance means that there are some claims about religions that are not really within, you know, the purview of religious studies as an academic field, either to make or really to be considering making. Religious studies, I think, should aim to account for and should aim to explain religion, and that includes, if necessary, going the whole hog and accounting for the formation and the origin of religious beliefs and practices. But one can explain and account for without being, I think, an ideological critic. And I think the future of religious studies as an academic field lies in developing a sense of the field as an academic formation that neither is for or against religion, which in another way is saying that religious studies perhaps needs to reformulate itself as a considered interpreter and explainer of religious formations.
I sent an earlier draft of this episode to Russell McCutcheon, hoping that he might record a brief response to how the scholars had reacted to his terms. We were surprised and delighted to find an 8-minute response in some detail, which we've decided to include here in its entirety. We hope you enjoy it.
I'm grateful to the Religious Studies Project for asking my thoughts on the various interviews they did on the notion of critics, not caretakers. It's a set of terms that I got from Burton Mack, a paper of his from 1989, actually, that he presented at Wesleyan University here in the U.S., entitled Caretakers and Critics on the Social Role of Scholars Who Study Religion. It was subsequently published, if anyone's interested in reading the published version, as I believe I've cited in my book, Critics, Not Caretakers. Mack's paper was published in the Bulletin of the Council of Societies for the Study of Religion in 2001, Volume 30, a periodical that since then has been reinvented at Equinox Publishers. One of the things that struck me, though I admit that I'm not sure what sort of question was asked of the people, was that only two made reference to my book. You don't need to make reference to my book, and it's not about me, of course, but it seems that several of the people really didn't know the way in which the terms are being used in Mac's work, or then in my own work. Tim and Stephen obviously did, but many of the others seem to understand the notion of critic as meaning to criticize. And if by criticize it means to, you know, find fault or to suggest things ought to be better than they are, you're not being as orthodox as you ought to be, or something of that notion. Well, that's just plain old silly, and it'd be good to talk about these issues when people are actually informed on the technical tools that we're using. So by critic in the book, I meant a culture critic, as opposed to a caretaker, not somebody who walks around with keys on their belt, though I do understand that. A person who came around to sawdust in my grade school when somebody got sick in grade 2 or something. But no, somebody who is there to translate, to moderate, to mediate, to take care of. Doesn't seem to me to be the scholar of religion's role, as Stephen Sutcliffe made clear. There's plenty of people already doing that. But the vast majority of scholars of religion seem to do that, seem very intent on making sure that religion is taken seriously. An old 1950s code word for take it on face value. Of course, we never take religion seriously if it's the quote-unquote wrong sort of religion. Then we develop all kinds of categorical tools to marginalize it, to problematize it, to explain it away. The last thing we would ever do is wish to quote-unquote take seriously so-called marginal or deviant, the way that these categories are used to classify behaviors with which we as scholars or members of liberal democracies disagree. It's not difficult to find the media and scholarship filled with debates currently on what type of Islam is the proper type. Those debates are themselves the object of study for a critic, a culture critic, by which I meant, and by which I continue to mean, someone who's interested in studying the mechanisms whereby systems of dominance, marginalization, systems by which power is articulated, negotiated, to understand how those systems work, how they function, how they last over time, how what might be understood as happenstance gets portrayed as necessity, inevitability. So thus we end up talking about things like naturalization, the strategy by which something that might have been otherwise, and we could use the term history or contingency to describe that way of talking about the world, things might have been otherwise, the strategies that we use to portray that as inevitable, necessary, had to be, couldn't be otherwise, necessary in that technical sense. That's the work of the culture critic, to understand how these mechanisms work, to provide examples of how they work. As such, for such a scholar, we're not studying religion, right? That should be obvious. We're using those institutions called religion as, and here I'm just borrowing on Jonathan Smith's widely well-received work, we're just using them as EGs, as examples of instances of wider sets of processes that we're interested in, things we've seen elsewhere before in other cultural practices. So at the end of the day, such a scholar is basically a semiotician. We're interested in how signification works, how signification actually takes place. And we're not really interested in the particular meaning, we're interested in the phenomenon of meaning. Thus, hermeneutics, phenomenology, the fact that in the British scholarship these things are talked about so much still really puzzles me. That's the debates for me have moved so far beyond that, moved so far beyond religious studies versus theology debates also, which I still see in a number of the interviews that I've listened to before recording this comment. The other thing that struck me is how the spirit of Iliade, about whom I've only written a few times, actually early in my career, is still quite alive and well. We're here, it seems, to revive and reinterpret dying religious traditions. We're here to take religion seriously, according to some of the commentators. We're here to represent the best interests of religion, depending on the audience we're talking to. These were debates 50 years ago, and I'm still really kind of amazed that they're so alive and well, especially in British scholarship, which, in my understanding, is largely concerned with interreligious dialogue. It's kind of a version of civics, actually, how to make a society work better, function well. While I wouldn't say that I don't have any interest in that domain, you know, I have retirement investments like anyone. I have views on how society ought to work. But as a scholar of religion, I think I have a particular task before me that is not necessarily the same as how I may or may not vote as a citizen. But it seems that so much scholarship on religion here in the U.S., in Canada, throughout Europe, presupposes that its object of study is somehow unique, pristine, pure. Nobody said the word sui generis in these interviews, but it was lurking pretty much throughout several of them, if you give a careful listen. Very much concerned how this unique object of study can somehow better groups of people, making a number of judgments about what is healthy, what is not healthy. This I find rather troubling, actually. This is the kind of ideological work that I think Stephen Sutcliffe, in an ironically different way, warned us against. This is caretaking. This is caretaking for a very particular set of contingent interests, portraying them as if they were eternal and timeless, as if we all just know what constitutes healthy and what does not. In international politics, it should be pretty obvious that there are lively and at times deadly debates about what constitutes health, wealth, etc. I'm thinking the scholar of religion can do better than that. That's what the book was written about some time ago. I think that's what Burton Mack's work is about specifically as applied to the study of Christian origins. I think that's what Jonathan Smith's work is about, applied to a host of different EGs, but always, in my reading, modeling a very similar method. How is it that we do comparative work? What does it mean to put two things beside each other? And how do we as scholars own the curiosities that allows us to look at this and at that in just this way and just that way, shifting the burden to us from the apparently self-evidently interesting things that some of the people being interviewed seem to think they're studying. Sounds to me like couch potato scholarship, as I phrased it in Critics, Not Caretakers. I think we can do far better than that.
So you've just been listening to the second Religious Studies Project collaborative episode on whether scholars of religion should be critics or caretakers. David and I would just like to thank all of the scholars who were involved in this, particularly Russ McCutcheon for preparing that lengthy response and sending it all the way from Alabama. And thank you indeed for taking the time to listen to us. We mentioned last week that we'd be taking a hiatus for the rest of the summer. So we'll be back with a bang in September, but do not fret. You still will have the Religious Studies Project over the coming weeks. We'll be re-releasing some of our previous podcasts as sort of editor's hot picks with new intros and outros and things like that. And there is also another roundtable or two and other essays and things on the website that we've planned as well. So do keep checking us out, adding comments on the site, telling everyone and anyone about us, following us on Facebook and Twitter, iTunes, etc., etc. But for now, from David and I, thanks for listening.